You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It is Friday. It is Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website with lots of links to cool things, his Facebook page, and regular news feeds, and the Bernie Buzz that you can subscribe to, his Twitter, at Senator Sanders, and Bernie. Welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And I should add, Bernie will be taking your calls in just a few minutes for the rest of the hour, 866-987-THOM. And Bernie, it was great to see you in Madison last week. The census figures just came out, and I'm guessing you already know this, but the median household income in 2010 dropped 2%. In Wisconsin, where you and I were speaking last weekend, it dropped 14.5%. Meanwhile, Paul Krugman points out in an op-ed yesterday that in the period of 1979 to 2005, he's looking at those stats, the income of the top 1/100th of 1% of Americans, the wealthiest Americans, went a 480% increase. And he asked the question rhetorically, so do the wealthy look like the victims of class warfare? Are they?
Well, look, I think as you and I have talked about, you know, for many months now and in fact for years, the reality of the American economy today is extremely dismal. What we're looking at, and certainly this is not just rhetorical, it's fact, is a disappearing middle class. And when you talk about people seeing substantial declines in their income, when you're talking about, in real terms, 16% of our people being unemployed, when you're talking about a substantial increase in poverty, I think you mentioned earlier that close to 25% of our children are living in poverty, and that is not only a disaster for ourselves today, it foretells very bad things for the future of this country if these young people don't get the nutrition, the health care, the education they need to become productive taxpaying citizens in years to come. And meanwhile, while poverty increases, while unemployment soars, while real income goes down for the middle class, people on top are doing phenomenally well. And despite the fact that the media, in most cases, misses this point, virtually everything that takes place here in Congress has to do with which side you are on. And our Republican friends have made it very, very clear. They are there, receiving huge amounts of money in campaign contributions, working with lobbyists to protect this top 1% or the top 1/10 of 1% whose incomes and wealth have soared in recent years while ordinary people have seen major setbacks economically. So what you have right now, I mean, one of the outstanding facts, Tom, I don't know if you have additional facts on this, but last that I heard, the top 400 people own more wealth in America than the bottom one half of America, about 150 million people. And with this wealth, what these people do is invest in politics, that's campaign contributions, invest in media so they can control the message. They certainly have enormous power over the economy. They are working right now to continue these disastrous trade policies, which have resulted in the closure of thousands and thousands of factories in America and jobs being sent overboard or absurd tax proposals which protect the wealthy and large corporations. So where we are right now is a major, major debate about the future of this country. Right up there, to my mind, at the top of the debate, is the need right now to create millions and millions of good-paying jobs so that we can substantially lower this disastrous unemployment rate. And one way you do that is invest in our crumbling infrastructure. And when you do that, you do a number of things. When you rebuild our roads and bridges and water systems and airports and rail and schools, etc., you are not only putting people back to work, you're also making the country more competitive. If you have a good rail system, good air system, good broadband system, good cell phone service, we become more more productive and more internationally competitive. Second of all, what you're doing is lowering the deficit, because when people are put back on payrolls and are earning a paycheck, they're paying taxes, because the major reason that we have such a high deficit now is unemployment is so high, small businesses are struggling, they're not paying taxes, and our revenue level is at the lowest that it has been in decades. The other things that we can be doing to rekindle the economy is transform our energy system to become energy independent, so that we're not spending $350 billion a year importing oil from Saudi Arabia and other foreign countries. And lastly, and this is coming up right now, very soon, and I hope the American people engage in this debate, is whether we continue these disastrous trade policies such as NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, which in my view have cost us millions of jobs as corporations have shut down plants in this country and moved to China. Tom, some good news, I think, in the midst of a lot of bad news, is I think, and I say this as chairman of the Defending Social Security Caucus, as you have heard me state on this show, have been very concerned about some of the things President Obama and other Democrats have been saying about Social Security. The Republicans, we know, have always wanted to attack Social Security, make major cuts, privatize Social Security. I was disturbed by what some Democrats had to say. I'm very happy that just last week the president announced that Social Security was not going to be in his deficit reduction package. So for a while, at least, we are in a position now of being able to defend Social Security. We've got to focus on Medicare. We've got to focus on Medicaid. There are ways to do deficit reduction that are fair. You ask the wealthiest people in this country to start paying their fair share of taxes. You do away with the loopholes that large corporations have enjoyed for years. You take a hard look at military spending, and you ask the question why the United States has to spend more money on defense than the rest of the world combined, triple defense spending since 1997. We can make cuts there as well. So right now, as a nation, we are on a cutting edge here, and profound decisions will be made about where we go in the future. The Republican Party has increasingly become a right-wing extremist party whose members in many cases believe that we should abolish Social Security, abolish Medicare as we know it, make major cuts in Medicaid while you give huge tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and large corporations. I think that they are way out of touch with where the American people are, but that's the battle that we are currently engaged in.
I'm curious your thoughts on this in the minute we have left here, in this dance between the House and Senate right now, where the Republicans seem hell-bent for leather on cutting something, clean energy programs or something, in exchange for...
Because this deals with disaster relief.
Yeah, for disaster relief. I mean, they're not cutting anything to pay for rebuilding Iraq.
No. Point. Historically, because we are a nation, because we are one nation, when earthquakes strike California or a tornado strikes Joplin, Missouri, or flood strike the Midwest, we as a nation say we are there to help you rebuild your communities. For the first time in modern history, what Republicans are now saying, not all, but the vast majority, are now saying, oh, you want disaster relief to help replace and rebuild the homes that have been lost in a flood in Vermont or New Jersey. You want help for the business communities that have the businesses that have been destroyed. Well, we're going to have to cut other programs. We're going to have a major disaster. This is a horrible, horrible approach, which I am going to fight as strongly as I can. In fact, just cast a vote against that approach a few minutes ago.
Good on you. That's great. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's Brunch with Bernie. Your calls, our national town hall meeting coming up next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And check out Senator Sanders' website. It is sanders.senate.gov. As I said earlier, there's a ton of great information. Genuine.
No matter what you say, what you do, you got me hooked. I'm here to stay.
Welcome back to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls. And Joe, watching us on Free Speech TV in Vermont. Joe, you're on the air with your senator.
Hello, Senator Bernie. I'm proud to say that you're my senator. And It's actually Joe Henry. They always get my name wrong. But anyway, Senator Sanders, I wanted to call was because, as you know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell has finally come to an end. And after serving 26 years in the Vermont Air National Guard, I'm, like, so happy that this day has finally come. I deployed one time, and I just wanted – nobody is talking about what the future is going to be after this great step. I mean, one of the things is going to be that we're not going to get a lot of our benefits. We need to recognize our partners because, like myself, that had children during my deployment. You know, my partner, David, had to be like a second-class citizen through the whole process. And the other thing, the great other big injustice that I see for gay people is if you're a straight service person that goes to Germany and you meet a German girl, you can have her immigrate to the United States. If you're a gay serviceman from Vermont that gets stationed in Germany and you find a nice guy that you like, he has no immigration rights. So even though it is great that Don't Ask, Don't Tell has come to an end, there is so much that needs to happen with the fact that Duma is in our way and that a general has to take the leadership, because leadership seems to be lacking not just in the military but all over, that says, I need to take care of my
Joe people. Henry, let's let the senator comment on
Joe,
this.
Joe, okay? Let me just say this. Joe, call up the office in Burlington and talk to – we work on these issues, and I think you've had some interesting suggestions as to how we can improve the situation. So give us our office a ring in Burlington. Thank you very much for your service to this country, and I appreciate very much what you had to go through for many, many years. So I think on this issue, we are making progress in terms of human freedom. We've got a long way to go, and you've raised some of the issues that we're going to have to overcome. But, Joe, give us a ring, and we'll look forward to working with you.
Francis in the L.A. area, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello.
Hey, Francis, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I have a question about Senator Sanders' new proposal on Social Security. I'm not sure what it's called, if it's Keeping Our Social Security Promises Act. That's a long name for it. But what I would like to understand about it is what happens with the those who are earning between $106,800 and those who will be taxed at $250,000. Nothing was said about that in-between amount of money.
Okay. Francis, thank you very much for the question. We are working hard on Social Security. In my view, Social Security is probably the most successful federal program in the history of our country. Social Security today, according to both the CBO and the Social Security Administration, can pay out benefits for at least 25 years and has a $2.5 trillion surplus. Social Security has not contributed one nickel to the deficit because it's funded by the payroll tax. Francis, what I did last week along, we now have nine co-sponsors to that legislation, is introduce a bill which would make Social Security 100% solvent, not for 25 years, but for 75 years. And the way that we did it is to lift the cap on payroll tax income starting at $250,000 a year. So that means right now, if you're a multimillionaire, you pay the same amount into Social Security as somebody making $106,000. We think that's wrong. So we lift the cap starting at $250,000. So nobody who makes less than $250,000, Francis, would have to pay any more. What will continue to happen is every year it goes up a little bit. That's normal, and we didn't change that. But the cap is only lifted for those people earning more than $250,000, and when you do that, Social Security will be strong for the next 75 years.
That's great. Mark in San Benito, Texas. Do I have that right, Mark?
Oh, no, it's Mark from San Benito.
Benito. Okay, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, actually, my name is Mark, but from Texas, yes. Actually, I want to thank you both for giving me the opportunity to speak with both of you. I'm a big fan. And Mr. Tarman, I was wondering, why aren't you on Bill Maher?
I don't know. Talk to him. Your question for Bernie?
Yes, Mr. Sanders. Given the race to the Republican primaries, how can they seem to be for the American people when all their lies seem to contradict themselves with a smaller government when, in fact, we have a larger government? The death panels when millions of Americans are getting kicked off insurance, creating jobs, which they haven't since Bush has been in office, environmental issues, and the fact that anything that the government does is socialism. Do you believe that if we increase the tax rate on top 2%, mandated recycling on school and businesses, and, of course, you said renewable energy, and cut the subsidies for the oil company, what do you think the future of the American economy will happen, especially if you're a fan of history, which I know you are?
Bernie, we just ran into the break here. Can you answer that on the other end of the break?
Yeah, why don't we take that at the other end?
Okay, great. Mark, thank you very much for the call. We'll be back in just a few minutes after the news and the break at the bottom of the hour here. It's the Brunch with Bernie Hour on the Tom Hartman Program. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. Be sure to check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for his newsletter, the Bernie Buzz, over there as well.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can drop into our live chat room and see and make write blogs and message boards and all kinds of cool stuff, all free over at tomhartman.com, 24/7.
And I know when I need it, I can count on you. Like 4, 3, 2, and you'll be there. 'Cause that's what friends are supposed to do, oh yeah.
Yeah, that's how I like to think of Senator Bernie Sanders, as America's senator, as our friend. Senator Sanders, it's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, by the way, for all our listeners. Senator Sanders, the last caller, we hit that break. His question, what would America look like if we were to, re-regulate the things that got deregulated and change our trade policies the way you're suggesting, and there might have been a few other things there that I missed that you might have caught.
I think if we are bold in the midst of this economic crisis and make changes in our trade policy, invest in our infrastructure, transform our energy system, protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, make the wealthiest people in this country know that they have got to work with the rest of the country in addressing deficit reduction. And it's not only going to be poor people and working people who are hit over the head, but they're going to have to contribute in higher taxes. I think if we do that, we can begin the process of reversing the decline of the middle class and give some hope to millions and millions of people in this country who have lost that hope.
Mike in Port Orchard, Washington. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. I'm glad you took my call. This is about a report from the Congressional Budget Office in response to Paul Ryan's request that analyzes the cost savings of Medicare when compared to the private sector insurance stuff. And in there, they concluded that Medicare system of insurance provides 19.5% less expensive health care, and the question is, why aren't we being allowed to buy our insurance through the Medicare system?
Well,
that's the question.
Mike, that's a good question, and let me give you the answer. I think I'll be boring some of the listeners, but I want to say it for the third time. The answer is that the Republican Party and some Democrats are more interested in representing the interest of corporate America, in this case the insurance companies, than they are the needs of ordinary Americans. Mike, it is not just that Medicare is more efficient and cost-effective than private insurance companies. All over the world where you have national health care programs, and the United States is the only major country in the world that does not have a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people, all over the world, they are running systems that are far, far more cost-effective than ours. Generally speaking, we spend twice as much per person on health care as do the people of any other country, and they guarantee health care for all of their folks. So to answer your question, yes, people should be able to buy in to Medicare. That is one of the things we wanted to do in health care reform. I would go further. I would convert our health care, our non-system, this chaotic, bureaucratic, wasteful system, into a Medicare for all system, all, which is basically a single-payer program.
Richard, in New York, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you. Senator, I think the American people need to know that if they put the Democrats back in control of both houses and the presidency, that we're not going to have the same mistakes of the first 2 years of the Obama administration. And that has to do with the filibuster rule. And I would like to know if you would be willing to publicly come out and say that you would vote to change the filibuster rule so that it is no longer something that they can use to completely stop legislation from getting passed, and if you would call on your fellow senators to also publicly come out and say, if we are sent back to Washington, we will not allow the minority to indefinitely obstruct legislation again.
Richard, that's a good question, and the short answer is yes. What we have seen since Obama has been president, is an unprecedented level of obstructionism. In years past, in almost every instance, it took 51 votes to get something passed. Now, on any issue of any significance, it requires 60 votes because of the threat of a filibuster. So I think, on one hand, you want to protect minority rights, but there is no doubt in my mind that what the Republicans have done is to use the rules to obstruct, and that has got to change. And I certainly will work on that issue.
Jasmine, watching us in Cold Creek, Oregon. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air, Jasmine.
Janine.
Oh, Janine, hi. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, here is the situation. Nuclear terrorism are governments who force nuclear abilities onto their public. And what I want to know is, where is our agency in the government that is supposed to hold government officials accountable for propaganda, exposing those who are advocating for nuclear power and the nuclear industry here in America?
Well, Janine, I think the agency that you're probably referring to is the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. But their job, and in fact, I should tell you, as somebody who wants to see the nuclear power plant in my state, which is now 40 years of age, shut down and not extended for another 20 years, and so I've been dealing with the NRC on this issue, their job is supposed to be to make sure that the existing nuclear power plants are as safe as possible. I think to some degree they have become an advocate for nuclear power, which is not what they're supposed to be. They are really an agency designed for safety. Make the plants that are existing run as safely as possible. In my own view, Janine, I believe that the future of energy in America will have a lot to do with energy efficiency. We waste an enormous amount of energy. We have got to, and we are beginning to make some progress in getting much better mileage per gallon in our automobiles and move toward hybrid cars and electric cars. And I think we are going to see that transition take place. We have got to move toward solar and wind and geothermal and biomass. Huge potential in all of those areas. And when we do that, we can end the threat of the dangers inherent in nuclear power. We saw that recently in Japan. I think we can create millions of jobs making that transition. And I think that is the smart and cost-effective way to go forward.
Sarah in the San Francisco area, listening on Green 960. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Sarah?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. This is a short and very true story, something that links very scary Perry and his inheritance, his predecessor, an African-American woman, myself, and the executioner. This happened in Washington, D.C., at the first inauguration for the Bush administration. And the streets in D.C. were, of course, packed with people. An African-American woman approached me very cautiously and very carefully and respectfully and asked me what was happening, why there were so many people around. I explained that some people were here to celebrate and some were here to repudiate the presidency of George Bush. And her face was so pained when she looked back at me when I said his name. She said, "I pray every night. I ask God to help me find forgiveness because I cannot forgive that man. And I know that Jesus and the Lord want us to have forgiveness."
Sarah, excuse me for interrupting you, but there are many, many people in line who would like to ask a question of the senator. Do you have a specific question?
Well, her son was executed by George Bush.
Okay.
And 2 weeks after he was assassinated, the DNA results came and proved that her son was innocent. And
so,
I would
so
like
Sarah, we're now out of 50 seconds
to
the break.
Others of them in solitary confinement, listening to these stories day after day.
Sarah, thank you very much. We've got Bernie. In the 45 seconds we have left,
well,
you want to comment on the Troy Davis and the death penalty?
I think we just went through the situation in Georgia, and there was significant doubt as to whether or not that gentleman was guilty or not. I think his execution was wrong. And I think we should join, in fact, the rest, almost virtually every country on earth, and say, look, somebody commits a heinous crime, put him in jail for life, throw away the key. But I'm not a great fan of the state taking people's lives through capital punishment. I don't agree with that.
And Vermont does not have a death penalty, does it?
No, it does not.
Yeah, okay. So I guess I could have given Sarah another 10 seconds. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. We will be back with our Brunch with Bernie segment here in just a few moments with your questions at our national town hall meeting for Senator Sanders. Check out his website over at sanders.senate.gov. They update the news content on there every few hours, every day. There's always new information. There's a great newsletter you can subscribe to. There's a link to his Facebook page. It's a genuine resource, actually, which is rare among the Senate websites. Sanders.Senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders in our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our National Town Hall meeting. Welcome back to your media support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman Program. By the way, we will be broadcasting live from the Take Back the American Dream Conference here in Washington, D.C., October 3rd through the 5th, noon to 3 p.m. Details are available if you want to show up and see us broadcasting live at TomHartman.com. Stop by and get a free bumper sticker. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls and questions. Junji, am I pronouncing that right in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, why are we not taxing offshore profits by big multinational corporations at the same tax level as domestic corporations?
You're absolutely right. We should, and some of us want to do that.
Okay.
Look, there are enormous numbers of tax giveaways to large corporations, and you've just indicated one of them. We have, as I often mention on the show, the absurdity of one building in the Cayman Islands supposedly being the home of 18,000 corporations who are obviously using it only as a postal box in order to avoid taxes to the United States. It is totally insane. We're losing $100 billion a year just on that alone. So you got all kinds of provisions out there which are designed to prevent these large corporations from paying their fair share of taxes, and that is one of the reasons why we have a serious deficit situation.
Bob in Farmington, Missouri, you are on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, sir. I know you said before you didn't want to be president, but are you sure you don't want to be president? You and Tom would make a great team.
You think we should run Tom for vice president or the other way?
I think I'm doing a pretty good job where I am right now. I'm going to stay here.
Bob, thank you very much for the call, and I really do appreciate that. But I am very, very proud to be representing the people of the state of Vermont. I'm going to be running for re-election, and I hope I can come back to the Senate for another 6 years.
Bob in from Bob to Bob. Bob in Chicago. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Tom. Senator Sanders, I'm honored to speak with you. Thanks for considering all of us to be your constituents and for being so accessible. Sir, my question concerns Social Security. I'd like to know if your bill addresses the disability funds. It's my understanding that there's only a six-year projected surplus, and I'm on complete total disability, and I'd like to know where you see the future of that issue going.
Well, Bob, by the way, just earlier this week, Senator Tom Harkin and I, among many others, addressed a large gathering of people whose slogan was Medicaid matters to me, and that was specifically on Medicaid. But to answer your question, obviously we were going to – I believe – that's a good question, and I believe our legislation covers disabilities. As everybody knows, and Bob very importantly points out, that we should never forget this, Social Security is not just for older people who are retiring. That's most of the folks on Social Security. Social Security provides dignity and resources to people with disabilities like Bob, and it also provides help for people where the breadwinner in the home has died, and it protects the interests of children and widows. So, Bob, the answer to the question is I believe I'm almost certain that it does, but we will certainly make sure that as we fight for Social Security and to strengthen Social Security, that there is no ifs, buts, and maybes, but people with disabilities are protected as well.
Curtis in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on AM 1350. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Tom. Senator Sanders, the news the other day was talking about the French and their rich being willing to pay more taxes because of their wanting to be solidarity with their people. Why can't we get ours to do the same thing?
Well, that's a very good question, Curtis. And I think the answer is there are a lot of wealthy people, and I've met them, who say, hey, I'm doing just fine. I don't mind paying more in taxes. I don't mind paying what I paid under the Clinton years. I have it good, and I want to see other people get a fair shake as well. I think what you have, and of course leading that effort is Warren Buffett, who's, what is he, Tom, the second richest guy in the world?
I'm not sure. He's in the top 10 in the world, certainly. I think he's the second richest guy in the United States.
You know, and Obama just introduced what he calls a Buffett tax. So you have Warren Buffett saying, and I don't think Bill Gates is disagreeing with him, saying, look, we're multi-billionaires. We're doing just fine. It is insane that our effective real tax rate, because we make our money on investments and capital gains and on dividends, is substantially less than it might be for a fireman or a cop or a teacher. So, Curtis, I think there are a whole lot of people in this country of goodwill. On the other hand, you do have some right-wing extremist billionaire types. The Koch brothers come to mind. There are others who apparently feel that it's not enough that the top 1% earns more income than the bottom 50%, or the top 400 people own more wealth than the bottom half of America. These people are obsessed with wealth. They're obsessed with power. They want more and more and more. Frankly, I think that's a sickness. But that is what we are up against, and they are funding a lot of these right-wing extremist groups who are electing people to Congress and state legislatures.
We have just 1 minute left. Sue in Indiana, you have a very quick question for the senator?
Yes. I want to know what we can do about the Supreme Court. It has all of the, brought these corporations in as people, and a lot of the decisions that they're making, I don't think are for the good of the country. I just don't trust them.
Well, I think, Sue, you're right. I think the Supreme Court has become very politicized. I think on most issues, what you have is simply a 5-4 Republican majority, and they vote the party line. I think, as Tom and I have discussed many times, at a time when campaign financing in America is a disaster in general, the Citizens United decision, which allows corporations to be people, have First Amendment rights to contribute money into television ads and radio ads and not disclose who they are, is totally un-American, totally wrong, and we have got to overturn that decision.
I'm applauding. Senator Sanders, Bernie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be back. The Republican debate went to a new low last night.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman. We're here with you 6 minutes past the hour. Welcome to the second hour of our program. The place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. No way. So, get rid of the stapler there. The GOP last night, every time I'm watching these Republican debates, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the debaters are like lowering the discourse, right? Like last night, it was like, let's do away with federal aid to education. So if kids happen to be born in poor parts of a poor state, you know, in Appalachia and West Virginia or in rural Mississippi, to hell with them. Right? No, particularly if they have learning disabilities, because that's most of the federal aid to education is for, you know, Title I, whatnot, you know, kids with learning disabilities. They, you know, and the crowd goes nuts. Ah, to hell with our kids. Mitt Romney last night saying that that the reason why teachers want smaller classrooms is so that the teachers union can have more employees. Right? Yeah, do you really believe that? I mean, I got to tell you, I've worked in education for over 30 years, in and out, on and off. I've written 7 books on it. I'm on the board of directors of a private school, which my wife and I helped create, hunterschool.org, if you want to check it out. I can tell you, in fact, this private school in New Hampshire deals with severely learning disabled kids. Our student-to-teacher ratio is 4-1, 4 kids to 1 teacher. That's about as small the class size as you can get. And there actually is a relationship. The smaller the class, the better the outcome. I mean, common sense dictates this, but Mitt Romney sees it as a conspiracy by the teachers' union. It's insane. And then here, the Republican, a gay soldier, asked the question, now, you know, here I am in Iraq. This is a guy in Iraq risking his life in Iraq. And he says, what are you going to do about and for me? Or what's going to happen if one of you guys gets elected president? They threw it to Santorum, actually. Yeah, I think he took it to Santorum. And here's how the crowd responded and Rick Santorum's response.
In 2010, when I was deployed to Iraq, I had to lie about who I was because I'm a gay soldier, and I didn't want to lose my job. My question is, under one of your presidencies, do you intend to circumvent the progress that's been made for gay and lesbian soldiers in the military?
And the crowd starts yelling boo, boo, like that. And then Santorum goes off on this thing about how, you know, this whole thing of ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell is some kind of giant gay social experiment. And it was as if straight soldiers are not, you know, there's no rule against sexual behavior for gay soldiers now, but there is for straight soldiers.
I mean, it made what Santorum said made absolutely no sense. The fact of the matter is, if you're in the military and you behave sexually inappropriately, and you're a straight man and you're doing it with a straight woman, that'll get you kicked out of the military. And if you're sexually inappropriate and you're a gay man with another man, that'll get you kicked out of the military. It's not about the sexual behavior that Santorum seems to be absolutely obsessed with. It's about who you are. And if you stand up and say, hey, I am straight, the military isn't going to say, holy cow, that means you want to have sex with women. We're going to kick you out. Or I am gay. Holy cow, that means you want to have sex with women. No, it's the behavior gets punished when it is an illegal behavior or an inappropriate behavior or a public behavior or a predatory behavior or a non-consensual behavior. But this is about who you are. Here's Santorum's response. Just consider how insane this response is.
Yeah, I would say any type of sexual activity has absolutely no place in the military, and the fact that they're making a point to include it as a provision within the military that we are going to recognize a group of people and give them a special privilege removing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I think tries to inject social policy into the military, and the military's job is to do one thing, and that is to defend our country. We need to give the military, which is all volunteer, the ability to do so in a way that is most efficient in protecting our men and women in uniform, and I believe this undermines that ability.
And this is nuts. He's like, it's self-evident. The biggest story, in my opinion, of the day, and I'm going to get back to the Republican conference, and then we're going to get back to your calls. We do have a guest in the next segment, and then we're going to take your calls for the rest of the day, because it's typically anything goes Friday. But George Soros today, or it was published today, it might have been written yesterday, reporting by Marita Bartiromo and Antonia Allen at CNBC. Remember back when the Republicans basically said no to any kind of fiscal stimulus by President Obama? And I said, this is it. We are going into a double dip. We are going into another recession, only this one is going to be even worse than the last one. It's going to be like a depression. Those of you who listen to the program regularly, you know what I'm talking about, and I've repeated this over and over and over again. So here, this is the story from CNBC. Billionaire investor George Soros said he believed the United States was already experiencing the pain of a double-dip recession and that Republican opposition to Obama's fiscal stimulus plans was to blame for sluggish economic growth. He said, we have a slowdown and basically a conflict about whether the rich ought to pay taxes to create jobs or not, and there was a deal in the making which would have balanced the budget over the long term, but which would have allowed short-term fiscal stimulus, which would have been the right policy. He said, but that was rejected. It all fell apart. So it will come to the electorate next year to decide what they want. We are in the second dip of the Great Bush Recession. And here's a piece from Bloomberg. This was the piece, you know, I caught this at 7 o'clock this morning. Surfing my phone, the news on my phone as I'm about to get out of bed. And I said, whoa, this is Bloomberg. Global stocks drop 20% into bear market as debt crisis outweighs profits. Now, they're looking at the MSCI All Country World Index. This is 45 nations. And they say stocks fell, pushing the MSCI All Country World Index. Lynn Thomason and Michael Patterson reporting for Bloomberg. Stocks fell, pushing the MSCI All Country World Index of 45 nations into a bear market for the first time in more than 2 years, and erased more than $10 trillion from equities since May. Now, consider that for a moment. President Obama's stimulus program was $800 billion. It was really about $500 billion, because about $300 billion of it was tax cuts, which don't stimulate the economy. So, you know, it was a half a trillion, basically. And that got us from losing 800,000 jobs a month to actually creating a small number of jobs, 10, 20, 30, 50,000 a month in the private sector over the last 2 years. In fact, we officially came out of the crash in March of 2009. 2 months after President Obama took office as a result of his stimulus. The 20% decline in global equities ended the bull market that began in March 2009, they say in Bloomberg. But $10 trillion has literally vanished into space as a result of the equities market, the stock market, crashing all around the world. Now, this is worldwide. But the worldwide GDP is $65 trillion. $10 trillion has just vanished from the wealth of the world. There will be significant consequences to this. The MSCI index, they say, has lost more than 20% since peaking on May 2nd, meeting the common definition of a bear market. The emerging markets index hit that point on September 13th. The MSCI World Index of Shares fell into a bear market also yesterday, plunging 4.2%. And the Group of 20 is talking about heightened downside risks. Republican economics are killing us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's just no other way to say it. Republican economic policies, 30 years of Reaganomics and Bushonomics are destroying not just us, the world.
Deep inside your soul, there's a hole you don't want to see. Every single day, what you say makes no sense to me. Even though I try, I can't get my head around you.
Well, yesterday, I already played Rick Santorum's Let's Trash the Gays and get a lot of applause from the right-wing crowd clip. And we've got a few others to share with you. But last night, we had another one of these Republican spectacles. And down in Florida, this one co-sponsored by Google, and Fox News, which I find a rather strange combination. Franco Ripple is on the line with us. He is the Vice President of Communications with the Florida Young Democrats. Their website is FL, as in Florida, youngdems.org. And his Twitter is Franco Ripple, FRANCO Ripple, RIPPLE, or FL Young Dems. And Franco, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
I'm curious what your take on, you know, the highs and low points of last night was. Louise and I watched the debate. We had our own personal favorite and horror moments. But how is the Democratic Party in Florida responding to the presence of this spectacle?
Well, first, you assume that there were any high points to the debate. I think they were probably all low points. But, you've already talked a little bit today about the sort of eye-opening exclamation point moment of the debate, which was, of course, this Tea Party audience booing a now openly gay Army soldier for having the courage to ask a question, not about any special protections, but just literally how would the LGBT community be protected in the service as it goes ahead and integrates, something right. that it did on another matter about 50 years ago.
Yeah, Harry Truman signed that executive order in 1948.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a really shocking moment, and it compares very well to just the last debate that we saw where, the Tea Party philosophy of I've got mine, you're on your own was really exemplified, obviously, by the crowd lustily being in favor of letting a 30-year-old coma victim die uninsured. So, the Democratic Party here, I think, believes that there's no new answers from these Republican candidates. We've heard nothing new. Literally, in five debates over the last couple of months or reaching back to last year, there haven't been any new ideas whatsoever from any of these candidates. And frankly, independents and moderates, who we know are the people that are going to decide this election, approve of the president's choices. In fact, 66% of moderates and 54% of independents in a Wall Street Journal NBC poll approve of the president's plan to fix the economy over the GOP's.
Yeah. So and in fact, I mean, that was actually a subset of that was pointed out last night by, I think it was Megyn Kelly. Perhaps to Mitt Romney, she said 65% of Americans want to tax the rich, and she didn't point out that the proposal is simply to tax them at the exact same rate as, a family with a janitor and a cop,
Right.
But anyhow, she said 65% of Americans want to tax the rich. Why don't you guys? And Romney went off into one of his, I'm one of the rich people. Let's change the subject kind of talks or something. I'm not sure exactly what he said. It seemed like gibberish to me.
I really like what the president said. He said at a fundraiser recently, I think it was up in New York, he said, I think the quote is, if asking billionaires and millionaires to pay the same tax rate as plumbers and teachers, it makes him a, quote, warrior for the middle class, he'll wear that as a badge of honor. I think that's a sign of this renewed president, not that he wasn't ever strong, but that, you know, progressives have, I think, been grousing a little bit about, you know, the president. And I think it's not simply a matter of what's the alternative. We watch the alternative at these debates. I consider them more carnival sideshows than debates. But we watch the alternative. We know it's unacceptable. But for those who are not, you know, yet knocking on doors for the president or making phone calls or involved in the Fall Fellows program or whatever the case may be, it's time to get back into the fold because, you know, like I said, we've seen the alternative. This president is strong enough to stand up to absolutely any of the alternatives. And again, poll after poll keeps showing, and it's not just about polls, but the polls keep showing, Americans, especially moderates and independents, really approve of the president's plan over anything that the Republicans are putting out.
On another one, Herman Cain last night, I found this particularly astounding because I am the son of a man who died because he inhaled dust. My father was exposed to asbestos working in a steel mill the year that I was born and got mesothelioma as a result of it, a lung cancer that's only caused by inhaled asbestos dust. I mean, he worked in a cloud of it as the hot steel came off these asbestos rollers. And at that time, they knew that it caused that kind of cancer, and they never informed him. And Herman Cain said that if he was president, the first thing he'd do is do away with the EPA because they're coming up with dust regulations. And I don't get it why the crowd was cheering. Does this make any sense to you?
No, of course it doesn't make any sense. But it
no, I mean, seriously, is there any – I mean, what were these people thinking?
I think what they're thinking is that it's a soundbite. You know, for the last 50, 60 years, however long, Republicans have been masters of soundbite politics. You know, Democrats sometimes fall into the trap of actually thinking about their policies, thinking about how their ideas would affect Americans. And this is one where it's very easy for, I think, a lot of those on the right to say, okay, well, if we reduce all regulations, if we take all regulatory burdens, if we put no rules on businesses, they'll be free to operate however is best for them to make money. And we actually know that's not true. One example of that is Wall Street. All of the Republican candidates, every single one of them, on stage and others that were not included in the debate, all, I believe, if you ask them, would be in favor of rolling back the president's Wall Street reforms that were put in place to reduce the kind of abuse that Wall Street has put this country through for the last couple of decades. Those rules were put in place because Wall Street and the corporate executive billionaires put us into the mess that we're in the first place.
Well, actually, those rules were first put into place back in the 30s because they did that in the 20s.
Exactly.
Pardon my interrupting you.
During the Great Depression.
Yeah, and it caused the Great Depression. And it's doing it again. You know, it's a thank courtesy of Phil Graham and his wife, Wendy. Okay, pardon my interruption. Franco Ripple, the communications VP with the Florida Young Democrats. You're doing great work down there. FLYoungDems.org. Check it out. Twitter at Franco Ripple and FLYoungDems. And Franco, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
I appreciate your insight and your perspectives. We'll be back on Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with your calls right after this. 27 minutes past the hour. Anything Goes Friday. As I said, keep your eyes on the economy. I believe that we have officially begun the ascent into a double dip, into a second dip, and something I've been saying for some time. I'm out of the market, and I have been for a while. I think the whole thing is just it's a house of cards because we haven't changed the fundamentals. And because the Republicans won't even allow the simple stuff to be done that would get us through a patch until we change the fundamentals. And, in fact, the Republican strategy is very clear. Crash the economy as hard and as fast as you can so that President Obama is defeated in 2012. And here's what disheartened me about last night's Republican presidential primary debate down in Florida. And that was that Rick Perry looks like he's going down in flames. I predict that, you know, within a month, Rick Perry will not even be a factor in the Republican Party. It's going to be Mitt Romney. And that Rick Perry will have, you know, last night disgraced himself to the point, basically in the eyes of Republicans, to the point that he won't even be a vice presidential nominee contender. He's toast. And the simple reason is twofold. One, he had an opportunity to attack Mitt Romney as a flip-flopper, and he just stumbled all over his words. He forgot his lines. He didn't have his list. He should have written it on his hand. I'm not joking. You know, do a pull of Sarah Palin. Write it on your hand. Here's the list of things that Mitt Romney flip-flopped on. There's a long list. And two, he defended giving in-state tuition to people who are not citizens of the United States and come into the United States from Mexico or other countries illegally. And in fact, he not only defended it, he defended it robustly. He said to the others, you know, if you oppose this policy, you don't have a heart. Now, I happen to agree with him. I think, you know, if somebody is, you know, brought into this country at the age of 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 or whatever, as, you know, a little kid brought into this country, they have no say in the matter. They should have access to health care. They should have access to education. And if they live in Texas, they should have an in-state tuition rate. Frankly, I think all education should be free in this country, like it is in most every other developed country in the world, like it is in Mexico, where they have some of the best universities free in Mexico City. But in any case, when Rick Perry came out and said that he supports giving in-state tuition, $100,000 subsidy over a four-year, you know, the 4 years to get a degree, roughly $100,000 subsidy, state-funded subsidy to the children of illegal aliens, children whom themselves are illegal aliens or immigrants, the Republican word, not mine. When he said that, he doomed himself. There is no chance that this guy is going to be the Republican nominee. And then when he blew the chance to take down Mitt Romney, he made it clear to the real intellectuals of the party, the Bill Kristols, I hate to call her an intellectual, but the Ann Coulters, who tweeted words of the effect of, you know, Perry's shooting himself with his own tongue, or losing the race with his own tongue. He made it clear to them that if this guy can't debate Mitt Romney, you know, in friendly territory, President Obama, who's a very, very good debater and very eloquent, will eat his lunch. So, you know, barring some last-minute candidate, and there may well be one, barring the entrance of Chris Christie into the race or somebody else, I personally don't think Chris Christie would be that great a candidate from the Republican point of view. But, you know, barring that, it's going to be Mitt Romney. He's going to be the guy. The question is, who's going to be the vice presidential candidate? And he's going to have to go for a social conservative. And have you noticed that Michelle Bachmann is not attacking Mitt Romney so much anymore? I think that everybody on that platform last night got it, particularly when Perry just stumbled. The light bulb went off for all of them. Okay, the race is on now for the vice presidential nominee. And the reason why I say that's bad news is because Mitt Romney is rich, well-connected. His campaign has been principally funded by Wall Street, which is where over a third of all corporate profits in America were made last year. You've got Wall Street billionaires. There are at least a dozen people on Wall Street who could write a check for 1 month of their income and pay for an entire presidential campaign, $1 billion. Well, that wouldn't be 1 month. It would be, well, no, There's a guy who made $10 billion either last year or the year before. So that would be, you know, a month and a half of his income. But, you know, the top 10 hedge fund managers on Wall Street average $2 billion in income a year. And so if those 10 got together, there's $20 billion bucks there, and just pooled 1 month of their income, they could run the Romney campaign. And frankly, I think they will. And then they'll just say absolutely anything. What they won't say is what Mitt Romney said last night.
There are a lot of reasons not to elect me.
I wish you'd been a little more specific. Give me the list, Mitt. I want to know the list. Okay, let's pick up your calls. DiCarlo in Oakland. Hey, DiCarlo, what's up?
Hey, how are you doing, Tom? I just wanted to say it's kind of ironic that 2 days ago we actually, forgive me for being a little bringing down the joviality of the moment, but 2 days ago we executed an innocent man. Yesterday was the 149th anniversary of the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. And then today we're talking about poverty going up to 1 in 4 children in this country. Again, I've got to ask you on this, why can't we come up with some solution to get poor people injected into the political process? I know you were talking about the situation with driving, driver's licenses, getting them injected that way. I'm just saying we should be able to get some way within food stamps and welfare to get those people involved in the voting process, because again, you're talking about mega transnational multi-billion dollar corporations primarily steamrolling everyone else.
Yeah.
So if we don't, as progressives, get something else involved besides us as activated people, if we don't get these poor people involved in the process, we're all going to become that.
Yeah, DiCarlo, you're absolutely right. And thank you for the question. You raise a couple of issues. One is that the League of Women Voters, for example, in many states is no longer doing voter registration drives. It used to be ACORN. I mean, ACORN registered millions and millions of people to vote legally. No voter fraud there. Thank you very much. And those people turned out, and they helped elect President Obama and a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate. And of course, we all know ACORN got taken down by lies and defamation, basically. But they got taken down. And then these state legislators at these ERIC conferences, or ALEC, excuse me, the American Legislative Exchange Council, where corporations sit side by side with state legislators and write legislation to be introduced into the states. Several states have basically criminalized registering people to vote by saying, you know, if you make a mistake on the form, if the person gave incorrect information, if you wait more than 3 days to turn the form in, et cetera, et cetera, then you, the person who's doing the voter registration drive, you personally can go to jail. And so even the League of Women Voters has stopped their voter registration drives in many of these states. The Republicans are rigging the game in advance of the election. And other than pointing it out and hoping that the Obama Justice Department will start doing something about it, I don't have a solution beyond that. I mean, we need to, you know, contact our representatives and say, you know, it looks like the Republicans are rigging the game. They're making it harder and harder to vote. This is the Paul Weyrich strategy on steroids. Paul Weyrich, I'll play it again. You can't play this clip enough. This is the guy who got Ronald Reagan elected. This is Paul Weyrich talking to a group of Republicans in a church in 1980 about how the Republicans plan to win elections over the next 30 years. This is the guy who also was a major player in the George W. Bush campaign.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And that's where these guys are at. Our leverage goes up as the voting populace goes down. So in answer to your question, how do we get these people involved? I would say, join the local Democratic Party. Go to the local Democratic Party and say, how can I participate in a door-to-door voter registration drive? What can I do? If the League of Women Voters is doing a registration drive in your state, show up and participate with that. There is no more ACORN, which used to be a national group that was doing this, that you could easily volunteer for. But those would be the places that I would start. How can I get people registered to vote? In the meantime, the second issue that you raised is the issue of poverty itself. Used to be in the United States, with a high school diploma, you could get a job in a manufacturing facility and make a good enough wage, a good union job, make a good enough wage that you could raise a family, have a retirement, have a pension, the whole bit. That was the American dream, with just a high school diploma.
That requires an economy based on manufacturing, which we no longer have, as the result of our insane trade policies, which we need to reverse.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service, find out what's going on in the House and the Senate and the whole bit here today, plus your calls right after this. Talk media for the sane among us. Tom Hartman here with you. Ellen Ratner on the line with us with the TalkRadioNews.com, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Get over there, check it out. Ellen, what's going on?
Lots going on. The president today talked about his No Child Left Behind Act. They are going to be giving 44 states plus the District of Columbia requested waiver. And he said that if schools have high standards, if they do college readiness and teacher evaluation, then it was going to be okay. However, teachers union people are not too happy. American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, issued a statement today saying that waivers are an imperfect solution. She wants Congress basically to change it. She said evaluation needs to be more teaching and not testing, that teachers should be evaluated based on how they have done over a continuous improvement and not simply on sorting, was what they said.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that those teachers who are unlucky enough to get a job in a district where the kids are coming in already challenged are punished by this versus those teachers who are teaching in districts where the kids are coming in already privileged.
Right, and where they have no parental support.
Right, right, exactly. I'm curious what's going on with this,
high noon
thing. Yeah,
Is Congress
going to be shut down?
The Senate rejected, the House passed, as you know, last night, 219 to 203. Senate rejected it 59 to 36. Eric, and it's really over this money for all the disasters that have gone on. And so Cantor said, well, we're back. If we're back, Harry Reid has basically shut down FEMA, and this is going to shut down FEMA, and he's blaming Harry Reid.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, it's Harry Reid said no to a bill that was. What would Harry Reid say in response to that?
Well, Harry Reid issued a statement and said, look, it's important that the states get this disaster money. It's desperately needed. Right. So that's where Harry Reid is at on all of this. Right. Then they said, well, that they were going to leave this weekend.
Right.
But
now, the Senate has passed a budget or a continuing resolution, and they've sent it to the House. And the House is ignoring that.
They rejected the one that came over from the House. This is after the Senate passed one. You're absolutely right.
Right. And so, you know, it would be just as easy. I mean, one way to say it is that the Senate rejected the House's budget. Another way to say it would be that the House is refusing to consider the Senate's budget, or have they even voted on the Senate budget?
They only voted on that one bill.
Okay.
So
they have not voted on the budget.
Harry Reid basically said, yes, they're going to stay and they're going to get it done, and the House is threatening to leave. It's crazy.
Yeah. So do you think that there's a possibility that John Boehner, I mean, it seems like he's in a damned if he does, damned if he doesn't situation.
I got to say this. I know you're going to be mad at me for saying this. I feel kind of bad for Boehner, man.
Well, that's my point. He's in a situation where, you know, the Democrats basically have him with, you know, heads I win, tails you lose. If he now that the Senate has said, here's our budget, take it or leave it, and they've turned down his, if he takes it, if he tells the Republican caucus, or if he decides to go along, you know, if he can get a few Republicans to break and go along with the Democrats, you know, enough to get that majority and pass that the continuing resolution in the House, the Tea Party is going to hate him forever. And this 26-year-old kid in his district who's coming after him from the Tea Party is going to be super energized. On the other hand, if he says, no, we're not going to consider the Senate bill because it's giving almost $7 billion in disaster relief fund instead of the only $3 billion that we wanted to give. If he does that, if he then the government shuts down at the end of the month.
That's right, and we're talking about $3.65 billion. That is not a lot of money. By the way, Jay Carney today had a gaggle at the White House, and he accused the House of playing politics, not surprising. He said they knew the continuing resolution would never pass the Senate, and he said the fever has not been broken.
The fever being the infection, the Tea Party infection.
That's right.
Oh, my. Okay, so what else is going on?
Okay.
Oh, well, actually, one last question. Where is this going to go now?
Well, I mean, hopefully they're going to come up with some agreement over the weekend.
The House and the Senate.
That's right.
Okay. Well, this is going to be an interesting one to watch.
The a couple other interesting things. Joe Barton, of course, today was the Solyndra hearings, and Joe Barton asked the CEO, he said, well, American people deserve to know what's happening. And he said, well, the CEO, his name is Harrison, took the Fifth Amendment. Then Henry Waxman, a Democrat, said that the CEO had been in his office a month before. He said that they were having a bright future at the company and booming sales. And he said, I don't think I'm going to get an answer as to why. So this was really sort of a bipartisan going after this Harrison character.
Yeah. Well, in fact, the story of Solyndra that's not told on Fox News is that the Bush administration pushed this loan for 2 years, and it was granted only 2 months into the Obama administration, and that it was, you know, this the Bush administration had been pushing this thing really, really hard. I think Progress has done a really great piece of investigative research.
But on the other hand, they're not answering any questions. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but the right-wing talk radio is making it seem like it's some sort of
Obama
conspiracy.
Is totally Obama's fault.
Yeah, and this was Bush's thing.
Okay, a couple other interesting things. Jimmy LaSalva, you know him from GOP Proud.
Yep.
He said that
gay Republicans.
They should never have booed the service member when he was asked yesterday in the debate about his service. And he was asked a question about don't ask, don't tell by a service member, and he was booed yesterday in the debate. And Santorum said there should be no sexuality in the military.
Right. And I think Santorum mixes up sexual activity with sexual identity. I don't think he understands the distinction between the two.
Yeah, you know, my experience with Santorum, and I know the guy when he was in the Senate, he doesn't have much discrimination in terms of anything except how to discriminate on other people.
In other words, he's not the brightest bulb in the
tree. That's right.
Okay.
Mitch Daniels was in town with his book, The Governor. He is not ruled out running for vice president. And apparently, we are hearing from our really good sources that people are after Chris Christie to run for vice president, and there's even weekly visits.
Oh, that's interesting. It seems to me that Rick Perry went down in flames last night. Do you agree? Yeah. I think it's going to be Mitt Romney. So the question is, who's going to be vice president? Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the world is officially sliding into a double-dip recession. If Bloomberg is to be believed, Bloomberg stocks fell, according to the MSCI All-Country World Index of 45 nations, into a bear market for the first time in more than 2 years, erasing more than $10 trillion. From equities since May. $10 trillion just vanished into space in a world with a $65 trillion GDP. Tell me that's not going to be a problem? Meanwhile, in my opinion, Rick Perry went down in flames last night. Rick Santorum made a fool of himself. Michelle Bachmann looks like she's running for vice president. Mitt Romney is clearly going to be the presidential nominee unless a real heavy hitter steps into the race really soon, and I'm not sure there are any, although Mitch Daniels possibly, I don't know. We'll see. Chris Christie, Marco Rubio's too green. So, anyhow, that's what's going on here. George Soros, by the way, agrees with my analysis, which I've been sharing with you for months now. For years now, actually. In fact, it was those of you who've been listening to this program for years know that it was,
3-4 years into the Bush administration that I was saying, look out, this market is not going to last. This is not going to be sustainable. You know, look at what these people are doing. Look at what's going on. You know, in 2006, when the housing market dropped 34 points, I was on the air saying, you know, this is the leading indicator. And I was, at that time, I thought it would be within a year, because back in 1926, the housing market crashed in the United States by about 30%, a little over 30%. And that, 1926, 1927, depending on where you were. It started in Florida in 26, and by 27, it had hit New York and the rest of the country. And it was just a wipeout of the housing market. And that led directly, that loss of consumer equity led directly to the crash, along with, you know, unrestrained speculation and the ability to buy on margin and all this other stuff, led directly to the great crash of 1929 and the Republican Great Depression. And so in 2006, when that housing market crashed, I was on the air saying, this is it. Look out. Run for cover. And we got the hell out of the market, and we had Ravi Batran, an economist, and we'll have to get Ravi back on, you know, one of these days soon. But anyhow, anything goes Friday. Let's pick up your calls. Ron in Tennessee. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I just wanted to give a slight input on the EPA regulations that they're trying to do away with. Just, I was raised in a chemical company town, and I remember vividly all of my life that on the front page of the paper before the Clean Water and Air Act, there was a picture of a little boy on a pony who had happened to wade into the waters below this chemical town, and it had eaten the hair and all the meat off of the legs of the pony, and it had to be put down. And the picture on the paper was the officials from the chemical plant giving the boy a new pony and saying, oh, what good guys we are. Now, I'm astounded that people want to go back to that type of an environment. And just recently here, I would say the last couple of weeks, I've seen a direct advertisement of a bucking bronco with someone holding on for their life. And it's by the Clean Coal Coalition directly blaming the EPA for the high energy bills.
Right.
And I'm astounded that people can't read between the lines, and the people, especially my age group, that do not remember how it was walking to school and your eyes and throat burned so bad you couldn't stand it. Wow. And that's about my rant for the day, Tom. Thanks
okay.
for hearing me.
That's a good one, Ron. Thank you very much. Very, very well said. Yeah, I don't get it either. I mean, I remember when the Cuyahoga River caught on fire. I remember when Lake Erie was dead. It was literally dead. One of the biggest inland water, you know, lakes in on Earth, dead. And we brought it back. And the EPA brought it back. And not just the EPA, but we brought it back. And to say that we want to do away with the Environmental Protection Agency, I mean, yeah, I know, you know, it was put in place during the Nixon administration. I know Nixon vetoed it and Congress overrode his veto. And the Republicans have been opposed to it ever since. I mean, they were opposed to it before. They do not like the fact that industry can, you know, and the coal industry, of course, is freaking out about it because they don't like the fact that sulfur dioxide and mercury emissions are being regulated now. So you got to scrub these things. You got to scrub the output of these coal plants. It's amazing. Judy in Rhode Island. Hey, Judy, what's up? Judy?
All of the good topics you bring up, I learned so much.
Well, thank you.
I want to pass one thing along to you, and that is what a visual representation of what $50 billion is,
mm-hmm.
which is what the Koch brothers have.
Right.
If you have a stack of $100 bills and you have $25,000 in that, it would be 1 inch high. If
right.
you have $100,000 in that, it's 4 inches high.
Right.
$50 billion is 31.5 miles high.
Wow. Wow. So the average working person, if you had a stack of $100 bills, the average working person making around $50,000 a year in the United States, they would have about a 2-inch high stack of $100 bills a year.
Yes.
Right. And the Koch brothers have a 31-mile high stack of $100 bills? Did I have that right?
I think that's their total wealth, not their income.
Right, that's their total wealth.
I'm going on $50 billion.
Okay, well, the average wealth in the United States of African-American families is around $5,000. So that's a quarter of an inch or something like that.
Right.
That's very little. And the average wealth of white families in the United States is about $86,000. And so that would be a stack of about 3 inches high.
Compared
to the Koch
brothers.
Right, so okay.
If you do the math, people don't understand what $1 billion is. A $1 billion would be, let's see, I don't know.
No, I got it. It's $1,000 million. Judy, I want to let some other folks get in here. It's Anything Goes Friday. But thank you for the call. That was a great graphic. I really appreciate it. Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's up?
How you doing? I just wanted to know if you were aware that the reason the post office is having trouble is because of a 2006 law passed by the Republican Congress and the Bush administration that required that the post office pre-fund their pensions 75 years in advance.
Yes, we've talked about that several times on this program. In fact, we had the head of the Postal Union on here about 2 weeks ago on the topic, and you're absolutely right. No corporation in America does this. No government institution does this. This is a poison pill. This was the same Congress that passed Medicare Part D, which was a poison pill to destroy Medicare, which said that, you know, people are going to get prescription drugs, but the government can't negotiate prices. It was a way of breaking the back of Medicare, and now the Republicans are all running around going, look it, Medicare is broke. And they wanted to break the back of the post office. And the reason why they want to break the back of the post office is because with 600,000 employees, the post office is the second largest single employer in the United States behind Walmart. And Walmart's not unionized. So the post office is the largest unionized employer in the United States. And they want to break the back of that union. And that's why they're going after the post office. So what they said was that over a 10-year period, the post office has to pay into their pension fund enough money to pay for retirees who are not yet born, even born, whose parents, the children of people who are not yet even born. And it is nuts. And I don't understand and thank you very much, Mark, for pointing it out again and giving me a chance to rant about it. I don't understand why the corporate media doesn't point that out every single time this post office story comes up. Because the post office would not be in any trouble at all. In fact, it would be quite profitable, thank you very much, as it was before the Bushies got a hold of it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. Anything Goes Friday, 866-987-THOM. Our telephone number. We'll be right back with more of your calls. You can drop into our live chat room, whether we're live or delayed. There's always folks in there.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Welcome back. Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you. Mike in Canton, North Carolina. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, got a question for you. I read an article at the beginning of the week in Common Dreams where the author gave a reason for a Democratic primary that I'd never considered before, and he mentioned that next year Obama will carry the Democratic message, but it's going to be a fear message, fear of the GOP. And he's lamenting the fact that there will be no liberal agenda discussed. We're going to be pretty muted. And I'm wondering if it concerns you that the possibility of the better part of a generation will only hear crazies and not us, not what we're about.
It does, and it's the reason why I encourage people to go to pdamerica.org and join Progressive Democrats of America, who are infiltrating the Democratic Party the same way the Tea Party infiltrated the Republican Party. It's the reason why I encourage people to show up at local Republican parties and say, I'd like to become a committee person. And be one of the local officials, show up at the monthly meetings, be the person that when the member of Congress comes back into the district, that's the group that he sits down or she sits down and talks to first. And so they have the loudest voice. Those are the people who write the party platform.
People, Tom, what about them?
Well, my point is that I understand that. Point is that younger people are paying attention to the media. I want young people involved in exactly the same way that I just described. In fact, the young fellow took over basically the Democratic Party in Portland, Oregon. I write about it in my book, Screwed. It's the very last chapter.
and Gavin White, I believe was his name, and in his 20s. And there's no shortage of good young activists. If you go to some of the Republican websites, and we did a whole week on this about 2 weeks ago, about how to infiltrate the party and take it over, you find that there are like literally video how-tos on Tea Party websites about how to take over the Republican Party. And they've been doing this, and we need to be doing the same thing. And Mike, once we start doing that and we get enough progressives inside the Democratic Party, then that will become the message of the Democratic Party. Jeff from Denver has called in and told the story of getting, anti-voting machine stuff put on, as part of the party platform. I mean, on and on it goes. These are the things that we can do, but we have to show up and participate. Mike, thank you for the call. It's a matter of tag, you're it. I don't know how to say it better than that. Bill in Seattle. Hey, Bill, what's up?
I wanted to address the infrastructure problem.
Yep.
Remember that bridge in Minneapolis that collapsed?
Yeah, when Tim Pawlenty was governor, yeah.
It cost $225 million to replace that bridge. But if they had caught it early, they could have redesigned. It had a bad design, apparently. They could have upgraded the design and probably saved it for $100 million.
Right.
And the Republicans keep saying, well, we can't fund infrastructure repair without cutting something.
Right.
So my suggestion, we cut the drug war.
Well, I think that's a great one, but if you're going to cut something, I think that that's an absolute great one. But here's the thing that boggles my mind. We're spending every week a couple of billion dollars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Republicans are not saying you got to cut something in exchange for that. But when you want to rebuild America, you got to cut something in exchange for that. And that's a message that needs to get out over and over and over again. And thank you for the call. That Republicans are perfectly willing to rebuild America, but only if we cut money to our schools, if we cut money to poor people, if we cut money to infant nutrition, pregnant women. But they're very, very happy to rebuild Iraq and Afghanistan and hand them off to what may even be, hostile governments. I mean, or end up being. Iran has open banks in Afghanistan and Iraq. It just makes no sense. Anyhow, Steve in Warwick, Mass. Hey, Steve, what's up?
All right. Hi, Tom. I want to thank you for all you do and stuff. You're a true warrior, and I appreciate all your efforts and
thank
stuff.
Thank you.
But I'm basically calling about the demonstration going on Wall Street in New York City.
Yes, sir.
And the lack of coverage by our networks.
Yeah.
I just called at NBC and ABC in New York, and they couldn't care less.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunately that demonstration has diminished substantially from the several thousand people to a few hundred people. But there are still, to the best of my knowledge, as of yesterday, there were still people there. And
there is today. I was here this morning, and there was quite a few.
Okay, great. Thanks for that report, Steve. We need to be covering it more. We will be doing that, too, as well, coming up next week. Thank you. As to why the mainstream media isn't doing it, well, of course, it's Wall Street. I mean, it's like this. You want to see how it works? Go to theyrule.net, T-H-E-Y-R-U-L-E, theyrule.net, and plug in one of the big Wall Street banks and then plug in one of the names of one of the corporations that owns, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, whatever, and it will show you the direct links among board members from one company to another. In the next chapter, one of the more recent chapters of Unequal Protection, I went through 100 companies, a daisy chain from AT&T back to AT&T, of interlocking boards of directors. There is a corporate elite that basically runs this country. Peter in Vermont, we got a minute to the break. Peter, what's up?
Yes, thanks a lot, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure.
We look at the Tea Party movement there and how they are literally steamrolling the American people into believing, that we have a war against the common people. That's what we're having now. And one of the candidates say there's class warfare what we're having. Well, yeah, we are having a class warfare. I could see it coming. Big business is trying to stifle the American people and making them believe what they want them to believe.
Yep.
And the trouble is now they have the news networks and the government backing this philosophy of theirs that they're right, and don't tax us, and we're going to suck the American people dry.
Peter, you are absolutely right. And this started, this class warfare, this class war, the first bombing of the war was in 1981 when Ronald Reagan busted the PATCO Union, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Union. And it continues to this day. And it's at the tip of the spear is Fox News.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up next, the good, the bad, and the very, very ugly. And your calls on Anything Goes Friday. Music can mean only one thing. It's time for the good, the bad, and the very, very intermundanely ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good. Florida Congresswoman Ileana Rose Leighton. She became the first Republican to sign onto legislation to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act, a federal law that allows states to not recognize same-sex marriage, or more appropriately, forbid states from recognizing it. As we saw last night in the debate when Republicans booed a gay soldier, it takes some political courage to be a Republican and not be homophobic these days. Because of that, Congresswoman Ross Leighton deserves some credit. The bad. Rick, don't Google my name, Santorum. Before the debate last night, Santorum spoke at a rally in Orlando in which he unveiled the secret to national security, believing in God. Santorum said, unless we honor God, our country will not be held up by God and protected in any way. Right. I guess that's why he doesn't want gays in the military. He figures whatever soldiers we kick out can be replaced by prayer. But I think Santorum is onto something here. Bring home the troops, bring home the war machine, and let's just pray away the war on terror. And the very, very ugly, Congressman Joe Walsh. The Tea Partier from Illinois, who moonlights as a deadbeat dad refusing to pay child support, went after President Obama and the media on Wednesday. And what would you expect from a Tea Partier nowadays? Walsh played the race card. He told the Media Research Center's Brent Bozell, Obama pushed every one of the media's buttons. He was liberal, he was different, he was new, he was black. Oh my God, it was the potpourri of everything. They're so vested in our first black president not being a failure that it's going to be amazing to watch the lengths they go to protect him. End of quote. Besides racist, Walsh's comments were ironic because he was talking to Brent Bozell, whose side job is a talking head on Fox so-called News, a media outlet that's devoted to destroying the president, not protecting him. And that's very, very ugly. By the way, the Tom Hartman Program will be live from the Take Back the American Dream Conference here in Washington, D.C., October 3rd through the 5th, noon to 3, at the Free Speech TV E-Studio. The details are at TomHartman.com. Stop by, get a free bumper sticker. I'd love to say hello to you. And so, you know, if you're in town or if you happen to be coming through or if you're going to be here for the conference, it should be a lot of fun. 866-97-THOM, our telephone number, Eric in Seattle. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Hey,
Eric.
First off, I think you should change your cons number and at least give them a chance to dial, because I don't know if they can figure out the numbers.
All right. And second of all,
I was gay growing up. Mm-hmm. Still am. I was obviously born gay. Mm-hmm. And, when I went into the showers, I was terrified. So I have no idea why all these quote-unquote straight guys are freaked out about being straight in the military and...
Okay, Eric, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if I'm being pranked or what. But anyhow, Jeff in Palo Alto, California. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Jeff, you are on the air.
Yes, if corporations are people too now, then they should pay alternative minimum tax.
That's a good suggestion. It's a very good suggestion. Thank you very much, Jeff. Fred in Orange County. Hey, Fred, what's up?
Hello.
Hey, Fred.
Tom, I'm a little bit confused and puzzled. I mean, we are with the freedom for the Libyan people against their dictator and the Syrian against their Bashar Assad, and this is all great. And I don't understand when it comes down to the Palestinian asking for their right of having their own state, our president decided to veto this.
Yeah.
And what is it? Is it that because of, you know, we're coming on to an election year, or
I would say that's a part of it, and part of it is that this whole issue of Israeli-Palestinian U.S. politics and the president last year saying this year he wanted to have a Palestinian state, and this year the Palestinians say, cool, let's do it, and now he's saying, no, let's not do it, the problem, even with a conversation about it, is that there's no black and white to it. You can, you know, this is why I so appreciate the work of J Street. I believe it's jstreet.org, but you can Google it. J Street, Jeremy Ben-Amia is the founder of it, and it's a pro-Israel Jewish group that supports a Palestinian state and peace in the Middle East and doesn't demagogue the issue. There was a survey done in Israel last week. 65% of Israelis support the Palestinians being recognized as a state at the United Nations. So, and there's a rousing debate going on in Israel and has been for years and years and years about Israeli foreign policy, about Israeli settlements, about domestic policy. You had a couple of weeks ago, 250,000 young people show up protesting the cost of living and housing problems. And these were Israeli citizens, mostly Jewish Israeli citizens. And everybody's obsessing on this. On this thing about, you know, borders and frontiers, and they need to clean this up. They need to fix this problem. We interviewed in one of our Conversations with Great Minds segments. We interviewed a guy who has spent the last 30 years in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and knew and interviewed Osama bin Laden, and knew some of the people who were, you know, participated in 9/11. And others, you know, suicide bombers and people who are killing. And he said, to a man, the thing that motivated them was the Palestine-Israeli situation. And it has to be cleaned up. But the problem is that it doesn't lend itself to simple soundbite answers. Edward Giraudet, by the way, is the fellow's name. And for a good conversation on this topic, where we had a half hour to talk, go to conversationswithgreatminds.com and just watch that half hour of the conversation that I had with Edward. Josh in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I actually missed you at the Fightin' Bobfest, but I've been streaming you guys and everything else that was done ever since, and you were spectacular, as was Bernie, as was Dennis Kucinich. So thank you so much for coming to Madison.
Thank you. And Cornell West was there also. He did a great job.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there yet, but I will get to it. There's so many videos to go through, and they're great.
John Nichols was spectacular.
He was the hardest working man in Madison, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
John, I think I see him more than I see my own parents.
Yep.
So there's that. I was going to say, I recorded the debate and actually watched it this morning. I couldn't sleep, and I got up at like 6 o'clock to watch it. Unfortunately, wasted 2 hours of my life. But there's a certain point where someone asked Michelle Bachmann how much of their money they should be able to keep, and she wanted to say all of it. And I wanted to ask you, how much should an average American working 40 hours a week be making, like an hour annually? Because there's a minimum wage, there's a poverty level. What do you think is realistic that the average person putting in an honest day's work should be making?
Well, let me, if Jacob can find it, Teddy Roosevelt weighed in on a living wage, is what he called it. This was in 1912. You've got it? Okay. Let me just, the audio is really bad because this was recorded on wax by Thomas Edison himself. But it is Teddy Roosevelt saying, we stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal. He says wages vary from place to place, but wages are subnormal if they don't provide for people to have an opportunity to have morality, to raise their children, to have in sickness, and, you know, to provide for health care and a decent retirement. So now that I've prepped you so that you can listen through the static, here's Teddy Roosevelt, because his answer is how I would answer your question. Here it is.
stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupations. The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions, but must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living. A standard high enough to make morality possible. It provides for education and recreation, to care for immature members of the family, to maintain the family during periods of sickness, and to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
So he just hit all the points. Enough to raise your kids, yeah. Enough to have decent housing, enough to have a decent retirement. It's basically, the living wage that he was talking about is what my dad made working in a machine shop, in a tool and die shop, what my best friend Jerry's dad made working at General Motors. He raised a family with a single income, working on an assembly line. In today's dollars would probably be in the neighborhood of 30 or 20, somewhere between $35 and $40 an hour, depending on where you were in the country.
That sounds about right, too. Because I listened to the entire debate, and I had issues with a lot of it. But, I mean, specifically from being from Madison, when Rick Santorum mentioned the right-to-work states and, dismantling unions as part of the problem, and he pointed to them as an example of people making more money than the average person,
right.
And that was a bad thing, that just seemed really insulting to me.
Yeah.
And it just seems like they have this echo chamber on the right, and every time these debates happen, you don't really see the opposition on the left and the answers that someone on the left would give.
Right.
And I just wish there was, more of a response to, or have even Bernie Sanders really answer all the questions that were presented to those people and provide, the correct answers for them. You just never see that.
Yeah, we should have had a running commentary or something like that, but you're absolutely right. And what Santorum was promoting, and Michelle Bachmann, is the race to the bottom. You know, it's like everybody used to have a decent wage. Now it's just government workers. Let's bring everybody back up.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Anything Goes Friday. Check out our website, our live chat room, which is live 24/7, by the way. Even if you're listening to a podcast or listening to us time delayed, you can check it out. There will probably be somebody there.
I see trees of green. Red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
My dad, who learned to play the trumpet in high school, his favorite song, his favorite performer. Thanks so much to our show, and we played it at his funeral. Thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Jacob Dean, our video directors, Chris Bryant and Eric Hamilton, to phone screener, Julie Lule, and writer-researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everyone at the various companies that syndicate our program, Dial Global on commercial radio stations nationwide, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial radio stations in the United States, Europe, and Africa, Free Speech TV on Dish Network and DirecTV nationwide, and all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and others around the country, Demona Kashvi, Dennis Trunoff, Don Rojas, all the other great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, to Rachel in Santa Fe, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for our tech support, to Jim Davinsky for working in our video today, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. It is genuinely appreciated. So back to our calls. Carol in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to find out, please, if you happen to know, first of all, a little while ago, Jesse Ventura had a program called The Conspiracy Theory, and he was talking about our water supply being sold or deported to China. And I was just wondering how critical our water supply nationally is at this point.
There are some very substantial concerns about it. The largest company that is privatizing water supplies is a French company. I think it's called FINA. And they actually privatized the water supply for the city of London. amazingly enough. And they have privatized a number of water supplies in the United States. This is a big story. We did a whole, a segment, had a guest on about this maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. And and there's a chapter about it in my book on The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. I think that the next wars that are fought are not going to be over oil. They're going to be over water. And we're already seeing that out in the West, the internecine warfare, states against states over water, particularly the water in the Colorado River. And it is critical. The other big critical problem is the possible contamination of the Ogallala Aquifer. We've got a lake underneath the central part of the United States that's larger than Lake Superior. It's enormous. It's got a massive amount of water in it, and it's supplying water to a whole bunch of states for both agriculture and for just regular human life. It makes possible life in areas, it makes it possible for us to live and grow things in areas where the normal rainfall would not make it possible. And if they run this Keystone XL pipeline across the Ogallala Aquifer and it starts leaking into that aquifer and contaminates it, it's going to be an absolute screaming disaster. And so, water is a big issue. Carol, thank you so much for the call, and thanks for raising the issue. Jack in International Falls, Minnesota. Hey, Jack, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I have a prediction. I believe that Mitt Romney is going to select Tim Pawlenty as his running mate. Pawlenty dropped out. He enthusiastically endorsed Romney.
Yep.
I think this has been Pawlenty's plan from day one to set himself up for 2016 or 2020, and I think Romney will select him because he gives Romney evangelical votes. He has a connection with the Tea Party. He, however, is not an extremist like Michelle Bachmann and some of the other Tea Party people,
right.
And I think that's how it might turn out.
I would not take that as a bet. I mean, I broadly agree with you. The one thing that Tim Pawlenty lacks and that you have to have in a vice presidential candidate is somebody who will play the pit bull so that the presidential candidate can be kind of above the fray. And you need a vice presidential candidate who can go down and dirty. And
so you're thinking Chris Christie?
I don't know. But yeah, Chris Christie would probably be that man, I think. And apparently, Alan Ratner says they're having conversations with him at least twice a week about this. Very, very serious. The Romney campaign, very serious conversations with him. That would be my guess, my first guess. Marco Rubio is another possibility. But I don't have sources inside the Republican Party like Ellen does, and she's betting on Chris Christie. We'll see. I think that was Pawlenty's strategy. I pointed out after the first Republican debate that it looked to me like Tim Pawlenty was running for vice president, not president. And
it seems to me that Romney plays things pretty safe, and Chris Christie is such a wild card and so outspoken. Pawlenty,
he can be volatile, but I think that he's sort of like Joe Biden, the same thing. You want the guy. It's Lyndon Johnson for Jack Kennedy. You want the guy who's not you. You want the guy who's going to bring the rest of them in, and you want the guy who, when he goes off and just says something crazy, people could say, well, he's only running for vice president.
Right.
Lyndon Johnson was famous for pulling up his shirt and showing people his scars and having press conferences while he's sitting on the toilet, and I mean just the weirdest stuff.
Right.
And so he was the perfect vice presidential candidate.
It may be Pawlenty's plan, but it may not pan out.
I agree. That would be my take on it. I don't think it's going to work for him. But it's possible. I mean, if you are the Republican establishment, the old money guys, the Bush senior fellows, you would look at Pawlenty and say he's the perfect guy. But I don't think that they're going to be the ones who prevail. I think it's going to be the pragmatists, the ones who are. Or the slightly less pragmatic, but the ones who are saying, okay, we're willing to get in the sewer in order to win, and they'll bring in somebody like Chris Christie, who is very comfortable there. Jack, thanks a lot for the call. Coming up on our program Monday, the latest on the war on labor, I'll talk with Liz Schuler, the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Plus, could social unrest hit America's streets? We'll speak with journalist historian Rick Perlstein about why it just may not happen here. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up, when you get active tag. You're it. We'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartmann.com.